weekend, Stephen, here. We can remember and accept it. I will commit the Buddhist truth on myself.
This is the Dharma. This is the Sangha. I spoke last night about the way in which training in meditation and the precepts allows karmically inherited spiritual need to coalesce in the hara and to be processed in a kind of spiritual cooking that happens over time. When all conditions are ripened, then it rises on the upwelling water of the Spirit. In that rising, it is enlightened, and the particular need is met by the love and wisdom of the Eternal. And whatever precise form is required, what should be obvious, but often is not. In fact, very frequently the obvious is not so obvious in this process. But what should be obvious is that a certain steadiness of training is very important in this process. I've often thought of the story of Penelope's tapestry from the Odyssey in this regard. Odysseus was away for many years, first fighting the war in Troy. I think that took 10 years, and then trying to get home. According to the story, some of the gods were upset at him for successfully coming up with a plan that ended up in the destruction of Troy, so they made it hard for him to get home to his wife. Anyway, I think it was 10 years in Troy and 10 years out getting perpetually lost and sidetracked. 20 years away from home, and during that time, at a certain point, most people presumed him dead. And his wife, Penelope, was a very desirable object for the ambitions and affections of various men. So she came up with a little idea that she would work on a tapestry. And she told the suitors that when the tapestry was completed, she'd pick one of them. What she did is at night, she picked some of it apart so that it was taking forever, in the hope that her husband would get home and rescue her from all these people, which eventually he did. Well, if we're trying to allow that spiritual need under the most optional circumstances to undergo its conversion and to get enlightened, then whenever we willfully lose the plot spiritually, so to speak, it's as if we were unweaving, picking apart some of the tapestry. And this is why perceptual action during this process is so vitally important. And it's also why it's so important that contemplative temples have a high degree of protection from the intrusions of the world, and why the monks in the temples need to be very careful not to spread themselves, as Reverend Master used to put it, in worldly activities. This does not require some kind of intensely extraordinary life. It requires an ordinary life that is lived in the context of spiritual grounding. We don't want to lose our grounding. The process is difficult enough under the very best of circumstances. It's simply silly to make those circumstances more difficult, you know, any willful way. That being said, it needs to be understood that there's no ideal way in which this is done. And under the best of circumstances, the process is at times messy. Reverend Master Mokian likes to say that the wobbles are built in, and there's plenty of times when the cooking is going on most intensely that we can scare ourselves as we come up to the edge of some spiritual cliff or other and peer over. That's where we really learn to ask for help. And that's where we really learn that the help is given. Whenever there is a sincere asking. So we don't want to undermine ourselves. our contemplative effort. We can undermine ourselves by being too loose in our actions and attitudes. We can undermine ourselves equally by being too strict. Twice the amount of effort needed is not better than the right amount of effort needed. It's much worse. Twice the amount of sincerity needed is not better than the right amount of sincerity. It's worse. Twice the amount of discipline is not better. It's worse. The Buddha taught a middle path that transcends the opposites of indulgence and asceticism. What we're looking for is steady, gentle, firm effort. Not excessive effort, not simply laying back and going splat. There are two forms of despair. One is a desperate striving. The other is a desperate giving up. Neither one is helpful in this process. This is why it's so important to have confidence in the eternal and to remember that this process is regulated by the eternal, not by ourselves. It's also why it's very important to be careful of both hope and despair. Both hope and despair are dangerous. We can very easily get impatient for results when we hope. When we get impatient for results and they don't happen, we then easily sink into despair. Reverend Master so often cautioned us, be careful what you wish for. This is so vitally important when the deep karmic need is being spiritually processed in our training. This is powerful stuff. We don't want to do anything to override the natural process which has built into it natural safety mechanisms. We don't want to use our will in such a way as to override these natural safety mechanisms. Some of this spiritual need has deep, deep roots. And if all the karma were to come due at once, it could have devastating effect. So the strain of it is metered out very carefully. So that we can process it and we can handle it. Even so, at times it's all that we can bear. Very important to be careful what we wish for and not to get results oriented. Great Master Dogen famously insisted that we train for the sake of the training itself. The way I think of that most often is, the following of the eternal is done for the sake of the following of the eternal and for nothing else. Whatever comes in that process is good. Just as it is the case that a person doing some athletic activity requires a high level of concentration and a high level of composure, will do much better if he or she focuses not on the winning or the losing, but on the actual activity that is being done. So we do not get in our own way and trip ourselves up if we keep our focus not on some end result, real or imagined, but on the training of this very moment. As long as we keep our focus in the present moment and keep drawing ourselves back to this present moment, the future will take care of itself and the past will not be a great burden upon us. What needs to happen in the future will unfold naturally. And that which is a remnant of the past in our body and mind that needs help will manifest naturally when it is good that it does so. And we'll get the help that it needs. Reverend Master said, don't worry about the past or fear the future. Live now without evil. Live now in the true spirit of the precepts. I spoke earlier of having confidence in the eternal. You can also call it faith. this aspect of faith, it is confidence. If I keep my spiritual focus where it belongs, from moment to moment, from hour to hour, from day to day, then I am not getting in the way of the natural process, the cleansing and conversion of karma. And that spiritual transformation that is so needed is happening and will happen in its own good time. At the same time, while we don't want to be greedy for results, we don't want to delude ourselves in a kind of sour grapesy state of mind. In the story of the fox and the grapes, first the fox wanted the grapes that the crow had and tried to cajole the crow out of the grapes. The crow didn't go for it. Then the fox threw a temper tantrum and the crow didn't budge on that either. So then the fox said, "Oh, the grapes are sour anyway. I don't need them. I don't want them." That's greed, hate, and delusion there, as Rev. Master so often pointed out. Well, the solution to the problem of spiritual greed is not sour grapes. It's not skepticism about the whole process. Nor is it deciding that one already has realized everything that one needs to, and there's no more work to be done. The solution to the problem of spiritual greed, spiritual longing, is to sit still within it and allow it too to coalesce within the hara and undergo the transformational process. An important step within that process is to really let go, to turn the whole question of results over into the hands of the eternal. But that's not where it ends, because the real nature of that longing is something pure. And that real nature will be revealed. As gratitude and generosity of spirit. finally, one doesn't have to wait for some kind of magic to happen one day in order to look up today, in order to have faith and confidence in the eternal today, and in order to follow the precepts today. There's part of the process of this process that the eternal has to do and that we cannot do. There's part of it that we have to do and that the eternal will not do. We can always do our part, and we can always trust that the eternal is doing the eternal's part. You can't remove any part of this process from the context of faith. With deepening spiritual experience, with deepening maturity over time, our confidence grows. And even then, there may be, for most of us, there certainly are times when some newly exposed layer of deep spiritual need exerts its influence on our feelings, on our attitude of mind. And then it's simply amazing how blind we can be. What at an earlier time, at another time, was perfectly obvious to us. This fact, while it may or may not be intended to combat complacency, really does do a very good job of combating complacency. Because so often, just as we think we're starting to get a handle on it, the bottom drops out. Whenever that happens, and if we're wise at other times as well, we can always bow